Brad Cole, the Illinois Municipal League Executive Director, joining us this morning. Morning, Brad. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, Tom.
I can't help but tell you, yesterday morning, I'm speaking with Ron Ellis. It's his last day as Williamson County Commissioner, and he brings up the Cures Act and $800,000. I did not have to look at the documents to know that that was pretty much the money that had been allocated originally. That was probably the best news I heard all day yesterday, Brad.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this a lot, and you know, it has been something that counties and municipalities, townships, all the local governments really needed to focus on, and we've been concerned about making sure that they got that allocation, well, that they received, actually, the allocation that they were awarded, Williamson County, $868,000. That's real money that's coming back to them. And, you know, it's about $150 million throughout the state for all the municipalities, the 1,298 cities, villages, and towns. So we've been working on this a long time, and today's the deadline, essentially.
All right, the deadline, and that's one of the ones we want to emphasize, because I had seen varying numbers, Brad, and even the best had it that around 350 communities had not applied.
Right. So as of a couple of days ago, I got an update on Friday, or I actually got the update on Saturday with the close of business Friday numbers. There are just less than 350 municipalities that did not certify with the state. Of that, they're mostly small communities, meaning, you know, less than a couple thousand residents. In addition to those about 350 communities that didn't apply, there were about 125 that had certified but hadn't completed the next step, which is actually submitting their documentation. That's what's due today also, to tell the state how much they think they're going to spend. So if you take the 350, and we're just rounding numbers, and 125, you got about 475 communities there. That means that about 600 communities have completed everything.
Right.
The total numbers, you know, just a little less than 1,100 communities in those 97 counties. We're throwing around a lot of numbers here, but for those 600 or so communities that have completed everything, they've actually submitted and will be in line to get reimbursed about almost the entire money that has been allocated, that $150 million statewide. For the 350 or so that didn't certify and the 125 that haven't completed the second step, we're only talking about $5 million.
All right, now here's a couple of things that I think are important. First off, the allocation was done by per capita population. And there's another issue here that I want to point out. I was talking to a mayor, small town, and we were talking about you. And he said, even if my town didn't pay for this, I'd pay for it out of my own pocket because of the information I get. So I assume somewhere there might be a town that's eligible that doesn't get your newsletters. And the reason why I want to point this out is, the mayor that talked to me about this saying, look, I don't think we're going to be eligible. We're not going to try. The rules have changed since when he made that decision to the point now. They were relaxed some. This is something that I had, you know, the proper word for starts with a B. I had complained quite a bit about this on the air, and I had taken Senator Durbin and several other people and said, look, what about this? What about this? And we just kept the pressure on, and those rules were changed, thankfully. So somebody who might have said at a head of community, I can't make these standards, those standards have changed, and you need to look into it today.
Right. And, you know, for a community like maybe what you're talking about, a community of about 5,000 people, that's $250,000. Now, we were very successful, and I was involved with the effort at the national level to get the Treasury Department, the U.S. Treasury Department, to relax its interpretation of the Federal CARES Act rules, which are being applied through the state, through their local CURE program. So with the relaxation of those rules, we were able to get all personnel costs for public safety included as a presumed eligible expense. So to go back to your statement, those small communities and really even the large communities that thought, well, we might not have that much money to be able to show that we've spent on COVID. Well, after that relaxation of the rules, Now all those personnel costs are eligible, and now all those communities could submit for their full reimbursement. I talked to a mayor last week, and I've been calling mayors and getting calls from them all over the state about this, because we've been trying to get them to submit their requests so they get their money. We don't want $1 left unused. Well, this is a community of about 25,000 people in northern Illinois. Their allocation was $989,000. Let's just round it up and say $1 million.
Right.
I talked to the mayor and said, look, you haven't submitted your stuff. Yeah, but we don't have $1 million worth of expenses. Well, what about your payroll for your public safety personnel? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can we do that? Yes. By the end of that 15-minute phone call, they now understood that they were eligible for $1 million reimbursement. That was $1 million phone call. And it just was so gratifying to me to be able to make that difference for that community that they're going to get that money back. Now, for what we're looking at, the communities that haven't filed, if we say that 350 or so, hoping that the 125 that did file have gotten their survey submitted or will today, and we worked with several yesterday to make sure they could get it done. But if you look at that 350 block of communities, and about $6 million that has not been distributed, it's about $17,000 per community. So we're talking about communities that are pretty small, that, you know, less than 500 population, more or less, and they might not have any expenses. They probably don't have a police department or a fire department. They might have the county provide that service, and they might not have a lot of businesses that they would have seen some expenses. So while we want every dollar to be distributed to the municipalities, in looking at the numbers, we're pretty pleased with the success rate and having as little left over today as there is, considering that we were concerned there would be the whole amount left over.
Just seeing a note from Ron Ellis saying, please thank Brad, we're getting all of ours, which is how we, of course, started that conversation. That was Ron Ellis. Now, I spoke to him at 7:20 yesterday, and then at 8:20 yesterday morning, I was speaking with DuQuoin Mayor Guy Alonji, and we were talking about, he looks at this point yesterday, he shared with me about $300,000 shy in revenues and lost revenues due to all these decision-making around the pandemic, okay? And you look at the allocation for his community at $252,015, and he's saying he's $300,000 short. That's a long way towards getting the right thing done for DuQuoin.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's where the money that was spent on those personnel costs is already spent. Yeah, I mean, you've already spent those dollars. So you can be reimbursed for that. And to your point with regard to DuQuoin, if they can get $250,000 back and they were $300,000 short in their revenues, they've almost filled that hole. Now, this is a one-time thing. So we're not likely to see another package like this, but that's why we want to get these communities to fill out their paperwork, get everything submitted today. Now, I will say also, the deadline is today. That deadline is an arbitrary deadline determined by the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. And as you know, I've been taken off of their Christmas card, this list, because we've been so critical of the way they've handled this. They messed with the timeline. They eliminated a portion of the federal authorization to be able to get reimbursed for things. But having said that, we've kind of moved on, and we've been working to get this money distributed within their guidelines. The deadline today is their deadline, and so I have asked them to allow for a little flexibility so that communities that haven't gotten it all in by today, maybe they got their first step done, but they don't have their second step done, that there's some wiggle room there so that this can bring in as many communities as possible, because the dollars are really dollars that are going to be spent through the end of the year anyway, and we've got to the end of January to make sure it all gets out. So to that note, I want to say that we're still encouraging communities to get all their stuff in. I believe all the counties have. So for Commissioner Ron Ellis, and I want to say Ron's been a friend for a couple of decades, and I appreciate his service on the Williamson County Board, and I thank him for that, and all the other commissioners that are serving in the and county board members that are serving around in the area. So I think all the counties have submitted their stuff. We're just trying to get some of these very small municipalities to submit. And at the same time, the Illinois Municipal League has asked the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to be flexible, give us a few days, don't make it a hard and fast deadline today at 5 o'clock, and let's try to get as many of these communities in. And if I can go one step further on that, Tom, I want to recognize that we've had some issues with how this program has been implemented by the state. We didn't feel that it was compliant fully with the federal guidelines. We tried to work within the system, and we developed a process through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity that we felt was adequate and that we could live with. That's what we're trying to get done today. Throughout this whole process, Deputy Governor Dan Hines has been really the senior level person in the administration to make sure that this is all happening. He's been coordinating between the governor's office and DCEO and the Illinois Municipal League and all the other entities. And I cannot give him enough credit for wanting to get this money out, being open, transparent, working with IML and me to figure out what we need to fix and how we can get things done properly. So I really want to give credit to Deputy Governor Dan Hines for working with us and making sure that, you know, this is going to happen as best it can, I suppose, given the circumstances.
And I think when you look at this, this was done March 27th, the approval on the federal level. The rules were different, that there should be an extension for being able to apply for this. Now that the rules changed, people were disenfranchised early in the program when they read this. And as I said, I had endlessly complained about this with everybody who would listen until some things changed, and I'm really happy we're able to see this money come in the community. And, well, like I said, had to fight for it, though, didn't we?
Let me just say one other thing, that, you know, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin chimed in on this, contacted the governor directly, agreed with the position that Illinois Municipal League and I took, that this money needs to get out. But for 5 months, from when this was approved in March until the rules were approved by the state in August, I mean, there was just lackluster performance. And then since then, in the last 2 or 3 months, we've been trying to get it out to folks. So it was kind of a hurry up and wait, and then really hurry up to get it done, and that's where we are today.
When I read the last Associated Press published report, you go to the very last sentence in their published report, unused money is returned to the federal government.
Yeah, and that's what we don't want to have happen. We want every dollar to be kept in the municipality that rightfully has been allocated these dollars. We want the money to be used throughout the state of Illinois in the small communities and large communities. We want that money to stay here. And in fact, when I was talking with somebody about this the other day, and they said, I don't understand, you know, you're so adamant about making sure these really small communities get this money. I mean, why? If they don't want to take the time to apply for it, or they don't have the resources to apply for it, why would you do that? And I said, look, they're paying these taxes. They are supporting the federal government just like everybody else. They have a right to receive this money back in their communities, and their communities are suffering through this pandemic just like everybody else.
And they live on thinner margins. You know, and that is an interesting story, because let's just say this right now. We say government funding. It's all taxpayer funded. Sometimes semantics creep in when we talk about sourcing, but let's look at it, because Brad just came out and said it. It's our money. We pay for it. We should be able to get the money instead of taking the money away from a town that's living on the thinnest margins ever and giving it to someone else in a big city. So we got a couple of issues, and money is also on the issue. We talk about this money that's available to help local municipalities, but Illinois announcing on Friday the plan to borrow some $2 billion from the Federal Reserve. This is the Municipal Liquidity Facility. This is a federal lending program. They are, we apparently have already, which is weird because they say you're not eligible to borrow until today, but saying we'd already borrowed at the same time $1.2 billion. We paid $200 million, and now we're going to be asking for more, an additional $2 billion. We're still borrowing money in the state of Illinois. We're doing it with the Federal Reserve because we go out on the market, junk bond status staring at us.
Yeah, it's a precarious situation. Interestingly enough, about the Municipal Liquidity Facility, when the Federal Reserve authorized its basically initiation because of COVID, it has been out there for use by municipalities and state governments in disaster times and other reasons, but the Federal Reserve authorized it through the CARES Act. in March, we actually brought the issue. I wrote a letter to the governor and the state treasurer back on April 15th and said, hey, we need to make sure the state can authorize municipalities and counties to access the Municipal Liquidity Facility Fund through the Federal Reserve in the event that they need to borrow some money. And the Fed loans it basically, I think, at zero interest for 3 years. Well, there was some hesitancy on the state to get that done because they weren't familiar with it, didn't really know much about it. Then the General Assembly authorized it, and here we are. The state is the only one accessing it. So we're happy that no municipality has had to borrow funds through the Federal Reserve, but the state is looking to borrow $2-3 billion, and it's interesting how that all, the whole process kind of from Genesis to where we are today. But it's borrowed money, and it has a short-term payback. The good news is it's there, you can use it. The bad news is it's a loan, and you got to pay it back, and that's within 3 years.
Well, I didn't know whenever I booked you in for the morning slot that I would be reading your name in a press release yesterday afternoon. You've now been named to serve as a permanent Board of Trustees member for the Police Officers and Firefighters Pension Investment Funds. You were appointed yesterday?
Yeah, actually, the appointment was announced yesterday. I've been serving on the transition boards. As you know, we've talked about public safety pension reform for a couple of decades here, and a year ago, the governor signed Public Act 101-610, which actually created the Firefighters Pension Investment Fund and the Police Officers Pension Investment Fund, two different consolidated pension funds for investment purposes only. I've been serving on the transition boards this calendar year. The permanent boards are being elected presently and will take their seats on January 1st on each of the two different funds. And there is an appointed seat representing municipalities, and I'm very pleased that the governor has appointed me as the representative of both, or as a representative on both of those funds to make sure municipal interests are heard and to represent cities, villages, and towns throughout the state.
You and I were fortunate to be sitting at the knee of a guy named Moore. Mr. Moore, you'll remember from Carbondale Police, Fire Department. He passed away, I believe, 2 years ago. I miss him every day. And he had taken me aside because he had been on the firefighters' negotiation for the first firefighters' pension board on how the rules for where money can be invested, like it can't be invested overseas. I mean, he went through the rules. I was stunned at the restrictions and how this is one of the most intricate things I've ever stuck my head into, ever.
Yeah, there are so many restrictions on how those funds can be used or invested because you want to make sure that they're safe. You don't want them to be put out there in, you know, equities that are going to lose all their value, because you want to make sure that the investments are generating returns that then can support the payment of the pension benefits. And, you know, Richard Moore, great guy, and his wife Betty and their whole family, you know, they dedicated their lives to public service, and he's absolutely right. There were a lot of restrictions. Those restrictions were limiting the amount of returns that could be generated, so you only had the cities paying in, the employee paying in, and not much else coming off of the interest dividend. These consolidated investment funds, which are not state funds, so nothing can happen. The state can't take the money, but these consolidated investment funds will allow for more returns, so more money goes into the fund, which means they're more stable to be able to pay the pension benefits. And at the same time, it helps ease the burden on the municipality that has to make the contribution.
You know, before I let you go, I remember my last conversation with him before he died, and he says, you know, we need to do something about this. I said, what's that, buddy? He says, we're using these new air horns on fire trucks. They're not the air horns that maybe you grew up with and remember at the parade where your internal organs shifted because they were so loud. He says, so we've gone to these more friendly air horns, and what we've done is increased the number of accidents with fire trucks traveling to a fire and having accidents because the horns aren't as effective. We need to go back to the old one. I remember that. It's getting our guys killed, and we're late getting to fires because of crashes because we've changed these horns. We need to go back. He was always working for the fire department.
Yeah, great guy. And that's really the spirit of all the people that work in public safety, and that includes public works and just people that work at these municipalities, including the elected officials. And they're always trying to find a way to better serve their communities. That's why it's a privilege for me to work with the Illinois Municipal League and all of the elected and appointed officials throughout the state, trying to make a difference. And that's what we've done in particular on this issue of getting these funds distributed. You're a big piece of that. Your listeners are a big piece of that, making sure that they hold their community leaders accountable, getting these dollars out, providing the programs and services, and doing all the things that we need to do to keep this state a great state and all the communities functioning.
All right. I'll be talking to you again later in December, so I'll wait for the Thanksgiving, wait for the Christmas greeting, but it's good to have you on this morning. This was a last-minute fill this morning because of this decision on this cure money and its deadline. One final time, if somebody wants to learn and they're a community worried that they're being passed over or maybe they've been misinformed and they have another opportunity, how do they learn more and be able to get themselves in this funnel as quickly as possible today?
Yeah, today is the deadline. We've asked for some flexibility, but they need to contact the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. They can email a general email address. It's localcure@crow.com. That's localcure@crowe.com. localcure@crow.com. Get in your information. Tell them you're trying to get it in today. Hopefully give us a few days of flexibility. Submit those requests and get the reimbursement.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you and I are both not going to get Christmas cards from the DCEO.
I'm just hoping I don't get anything else from them either.
Right. So at this point, just kind of, Merry Christmas to you too. Shout that down the hall. Hey, Brad, appreciate your time.
Have a great day.